Manifesting Our Wants and Needs. In this podcast, Eckhart talks about fulfilling our desires and what we can do to make that happen. However, he cautions against becoming dependent on external circumstances for our happiness. He says attachment to the outcome can actually become a barrier. Eckhart believes we must visualize that what we want is already ours and that ultimately the external world is inseparable from our state of consciousness.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. My question was, as you practice presence and conscious living, the definition between wants and needs changed. And sometimes it can get confusing. And so I was wondering if you could elaborate for us a simple way to define between egoic wants and needs versus a divine need that's calling forth to be manifest through us.
How do you see the difference between wanting and needing something, or do you see that they're very similar, or are they fundamentally different? How do you see that?
Fundamentally, from my religion, they were very different. You know, needs were food, water, shelter, everything else was. But I live in Las Vegas and I have 5 kids, and a pool really feels like a need and not a want. But they did change, where I realized there's a lot more up to me than I thought about what my needs are. I'm fine if nothing changes. I'm happy and content and fulfilled. And yet, you know, that would be nice kind of thing, versus I need this to be happy. I need this to...
That's a good starting point. I don't want to intrude into your personal sphere, but maybe you could share what it is at the present time that you would want or need or like to manifest at the present time. Did you mention pool?
Yes.
Do you have one?
No.
Ah, okay. Well, that's good. That's a good goal to have, to practice manifestation, and it's something reasonable if you live in this extreme heat. Have you already done some practice in manifesting it, or are you doubting whether it would be a good idea, or whether you become drawn into ego if you start wanting to manifest that?
I've done a lot of work with it, and I feel really good about it. I feel like it is, you know, like you said, that feeling of that energy, almost like turbulence, like it does need to come forth. And I find myself balanced between this new, beautiful way of living in presence that, oh, it's just totally possible. And I'm surrendered to how it's going to show up and how it's going to happen. I don't have to stress. I've done that. I'm not going to do it again. And then I think I slip back into those old, and maybe that's my ego, like, but you have to have a plan and you have to work hard, and there's this certain way to do it. And then I don't know how to explain what happens then.
Yes, yes. Well, I would suggest that you practice with that visualization. It's as far as I can tell, it's not something that you do to enhance your egoic sense of self. I can see the reason why it would be good for you and your family to have that. And do you know how to, the best way to manifest? The very essence of manifestation is to, Jesus said, of course, believe that you have it and it will be given to you. So that's the key for all successful manifestation, is to believe that you already have it. And of course, people ask, I've spoken about that a few times, but it's always helpful to mention it again. I mean, Jesus even said you can say to a mountain, move from here to there, and it will happen. In other words, he's saying that what we regard as the external world ultimately is inseparable from your consciousness and your state of consciousness. And this promise that you can, at the moment in the human development, what he said there, right now, it's to be understood metaphorically to say you can tell a mountain, because nobody on this planet as yet, even Jesus didn't do it. He didn't say to a mountain, move from here to there. But it is at the moment to be something metaphorical. It means you have enormous power in you to affect change in the external world, the external reality. In the long term, you could even take that literally as where humans are moving in the so-called future as humans, because it's humans are engaged in an evolutionary process. We are not finished. I don't know if we're even halfway there, but that doesn't. We can't know where we are because we're in the middle of it. We don't have a bird's eye view of where we are in the evolutionary process. Retrospectively, it's always easy to see things. So that's where we were in the middle. You just said, are we halfway there? Are we a quarter there? 10%? 90%? No, I don't think so. We're not. The evolutionary goal for humans is ultimately to realize the oneness of everything that arises in consciousness is really an aspect of consciousness. And the time would come when humans, once they left ego behind a long time ago, and then where humans can simply manifest by holding a thought, and there it is. In the meantime, we practice the way that we do. There's a time gap and not everything appears, but often they do if you do it rightly and if it's not egoically contaminated. The image, the foundation is the feeling of well-being that derives. The well-being is not the physical well-being, it's the deeper well-being that arrives from the depths of who you are. I've just realized that this is the English word, the well is the deep thing. So you go down at the bottom of the well, there's the water, the living water. So the well-being, the well-being, you have to find that well-being in the present moment, in the depths of who you are, by becoming still, becoming aware of yourself as awareness, becoming aware of yourself as consciousness. There's no longer you and consciousness. Your sense of identity merges. It is the consciousness. That's the wellspring, the well-being that is. Then you have an image, the pool in your mind, and you bring the image, you merge it with a sense of well-being. So it's already as if you were enjoying the pool, because the well-being contains every experience that you could have. It's already there. So this means when the pool comes, you will enjoy it, but fundamentally it will not make any difference to your sense of well-being. It's on the surface, yes, it's nice to jump into the cooling water when it's so hot outside. So on the surface, it's very nice, you can enjoy that. But deeper down, there's no change in that, because you already, so that means you already have the pool. When you bring it, you merge it with that sense, and that empowers it. You can then either keep the image in your mind. You know the famous things that people, you can read about it in many books about how to manifest. You can have a vision board that people do. Sometimes it can be quite nice, and it has worked for many people and does work for many people. And again, when you have a vision board where you put an image of something that you look at often, again, not making the mistake of believing that this is something that you need for your happiness. It almost seems contradictory that excessive attachment to the outcome prevents you from manifesting powerfully, because that would take it into the future, and you would create a sense of lack. So you already, this feeling that, as Jesus said, when you pray for something, believe that you have it, it has been granted, you have it, and it will be given to you. That's the important part, is the you have it already. It doesn't say believe that you will get it. Mm-hmm. You can also use, I don't know if you do, affirmations, verbal affirmations, that your gratitude, well, the one that starts with gratitude is very good, because gratitude is a very powerful manifesting tool. The gratitude for something, not only gratitude for something, it's generally a wonderful thing to practice gratitude for whatever is in your life now. Every day I have enormous gratitude for the trees that I see from my living room. And just to contemplate, I don't have a thought in my mind, I'm so great anymore, I'm grateful for these trees. The gratitude is there. Sometimes a thought comes in, and I've been here for many years, thought comes in that says, probably every day several times, I look and I say, so beautiful, so beautiful. And then I look at the sky, and then I go, so beautiful. That's my gratitude. but other people may say, I'm more explicitly what they're grateful for in their life, in the here and now, not some abstract thing that you call your life. What can you be grateful for in the here and now? This simple, a simple object, just whatever it is, plant. But you can also be grateful for something that has not yet appeared in the external, like your pool. The same feeling that you have for something that is here now, visible to your senses, can have the same feeling for something that is not yet there. So then if you use verbal affirmations, I'm so grateful for this lovely swimming pool that myself and my family are able to enjoy every day. It's very simple, but you have to repeat it for several minutes. But it's not just, the power is not ultimately the words. The power is the gratitude already derives from the connectedness with the well-being within you. That's the source of gratitude. So you bring it together. Again, in practical terms, don't overdo it. Don't do too much of it. Enjoy the rest of your life in between. Do an affirmation twice a day for maybe 10 minutes each time, for example, whatever feels comfortable, or maybe in between occasionally when you're waiting for something, still feeling. Not in an obsessive way. Again, that's not powerful. Never bringing in willpower. I will get this pool. I must have this pool. If you do, maybe you would get it, but it's not a pleasant journey, and even then it probably wouldn't make you happy. So this is a simple thing to practice with, and then other things may come in your life that you may want to manifest. And that's the surface of life. You need to honor the surface of life. It has its place. You need to honor your personal needs. You have certain needs or preferences on a personal level, but they don't dominate your life. So it's again living in the two dimensions, mm-hmm. being and doing, the human and the being. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go on to another question.
Hi, Eckhart. Thank you for taking my question. So my question is about that balance between being and doing that you keep reminding us about. And you see, I understand that it is okay to have worldly, to desire worldly things, as long as we remain rooted in being. Now, for those of us who aren't fully awakened yet, by default, we're not rooted in being, we're in and out of being. So could we actually achieve that balance? And if we can't, aren't we then, by trying to manifest some worldly thing, aren't we then jeopardizing our main purpose, which is to awaken?
Okay. Thank you. Good question. Very good. Yeah. You're more likely to awaken if you participate in this world by doing, rather than withdrawing as much as is possible and focusing exclusively on being. One could imagine perfect circumstances to connect with being. If you, some people may have enough money to not to have to work. They can live in the most environment that is most conducive to meditative practice. They can have the healthiest food imaginable. All things that are most conducive to spiritual practice and deeply connect with being. That perhaps would be, for many people, an ideal situation, but not attainable for most people, but perhaps attainable for some people. People around these days, young people who've made a lot of money through whatever they do on the Silicon Valley internet apps or whatever they develop, and suddenly they have $1 billion in the bank. So one, you could imagine perhaps if that, I would not recommend that you try to manifest such a situation because it would not be the most conducive for spiritual realization, because it would be like a plant that grows in a greenhouse under ideal circumstances, ideal conditions, moisture, warmth, water, air, gets everything, it grows very quickly. But the slightest thing going wrong, a draft, somebody opens the door at the greenhouse for too long, a draft comes in, and the plant quickly withers and dies. This is only an analogy. I've had many stories like that of people who were in that, including Buddhist monks I've spoken to. They lived in ideal environment in Buddhist monasteries. And the moment they got out and had to interact with the world again, they told, I don't need to retell the stories now, but particularly one monk told me he had attained blissful states of being in the monastery over a period. Then he had to go out into the world and interact with the world again in the city. People had to talk to various reasons. He had to do it, talk to people, and he could feel himself very quickly losing what he thought was the state of enlightenment. And suddenly he was in a state of angry resistance. And he even found himself shouting at somebody. The deepening happens through the challenges of life. If you could remove the challenges of life, it's virtually impossible to remove the challenges of life, but if you could remove for a period of time the challenges of life by living in a totally protected environment, that would be the lack of challenges would become your greatest obstacle to spiritual awakening. So the very thing that you thought was the greatest thing that could happen to you would become the greatest hindrance. The lack of challenge would, after a while, turn into your biggest challenge. It would be huge. So humans grow through being faced with challenges. Now, some challenges come to you are seemingly suddenly out of nowhere, they suddenly appear in your life. As you know, some challenges are of a collective nature, as happened recently for millions of people all over the planet. Out of nowhere, suddenly, millions of people got faced with the challenge of this virus, suddenly came out of nowhere and affected everybody's life. These collective challenges can happen, affecting millions at the same time. In addition to the collective challenges, similar things can happen on your personal level. Suddenly there's a health challenge. Suddenly there's a financial challenge. Suddenly there's a challenge of somebody close to you in distress or suffering, somebody dying close to you, many loss of home, breakdown of a relationship or marriage. All kinds of suddenly these things appear. They have to be dealt with. Suddenly they come. Then there are also voluntary challenges that you can create for yourself, which is a quite a good thing too. The something that you want to achieve, because then you create it. It is a challenge. Let's say there's a gap between I'd like to become a, I don't know, whatever it may be, a musician. If you're already practicing music, I want to write a book. I want to create a, open up a hairdressing salon. I want to open a restaurant because most restaurants are going bust now. Maybe good idea to open a new one. Okay. Who knows? That's a challenge for so many people who have worked in these fields now. Huge challenges. It's to be recommended to have some goals in your life, maybe not at all periods in your life, because a person's life has different stages. And there may be a stage in your life when you don't feel called upon to create a challenge for yourself in order to manifest this or that. There may be a period of life when you're fine with what is. But if you stay there for very long, the world will, if you don't challenge yourself, the world will challenge you. If you challenge yourself, the world will also challenge you. That's true. But if you don't challenge yourself at all, then the world will create something for you, a big one. So people who want to escape from, they don't want to interact, they don't want to participate in life. So they try to just keep away. No, I don't want a relationship. It's just too complicated. It's just too messy. Don't want to get in. I'm more interested in spiritual awakening. So leave relationships alone. And then I'm not particularly creating, don't want to create anything or learn something new. It's stressful and it's hard work. I'm more interested in spiritual awakening. And I just sit here and just do the minimum to keep myself alive. And so there are people like that. And after a while, the universe gives you a huge talent that you never chose. But there it is. Now face that, because you haven't faced anything else. You haven't voluntarily created anything in your life. You refuse to participate in life. Now here I'll give you something, because the humans need the challenge. And that could be the beginning of your awakening. It'll be painful at first, of course. We grow through the challenges of life. So instead of imagining some situation that would be ideal, work with what you have. That is the training ground for your spiritual awakening, is working with what you have. And within that practice, if you wish to do so, practice manifestation for this or that. But the challenge is here not just the manifestation, to stay connected with the present without losing yourself in what you want to manifest. Not losing yourself in the doing. Do. You can't escape. You have to do while you're here in this form. You have to somehow participate in the doing of things. But don't lose yourself in the doing. That's equivalent to losing yourself in your mind, the thinking. They go together. If you lose yourself in your mind, you also lose yourself, because mind is the most fundamental. Doing is the thinking that you do, that you people do all the time. They do the thinking. So if you're completely identified with the thinking, you lose yourself in your mind. And then you do things, you're lost in the dimension of doing. That's vitally important, to always bring back awareness to the present moment. Always, that's the entry point into the being dimension. So always, as much as possible, return attention to the present moment, so that you can discover the well-being that is there within you, that is inseparable from the vertical dimension that's the present moment. And then, yes, if you are engaged in doing, you will make sure that the what you want to manifest, that it that's not something that ultimately you do. It's something that happens for you. So when you, let's say you have a goal and you visualize it, if you feel that you have to create it, that's not it. There's a power greater than you that creates it for you. If you have to write a book, if you have to give a speech, let's say not these days, but often I give talks to people. Let's say the average number is 3,000 people. I give a talk to 3,000 people. If I thought I have to do that, now I have to do this talk, that would be very stressful. And that stress would prevent me from giving a good talk because it would not be connected. The talk happens, is the talk comes from the depths of the being, uses my mind, and then the words come. So there's no sense of doer. That is perhaps the secret. And then also the Indian teachings, such as Advaita, the teachings of non-duality, they often very profound teachings, non-duality, it means that you are not the doer. If you think you are the doer, then that's a state of illusion. And then you're, of course, still trapped in ego. The doing happens. It happens through you. So you allow it to happen. Your mind just, it focuses, but it's a bit like you can have a steering wheel or something. Your mind wants to achieve, it says wants to achieve this or that, but the power comes from somewhere else. It's not you. You don't have to do it. Also very important to lose the sense of doer once you have achieved something, some kind of great success or small success. One could fall back into the sense of, I did this. Oh, I did it. Yeah, I did it. That would be falling back into illusion. All the great, let's say the people who have achieved very great things, they have the greatest composers or artists or brilliant insights that certain scientists had that were not arrived at ultimately through or thinking was a preparation for the insight, like the theory of relativity suddenly came to Einstein. Suddenly the realization comes, the deepest things come as gifts from that realm of unconditioned intelligence. That's where the power lies. If then you have achieved something and you have the sense, I did it, your ego claims possession, it takes credit. If your ego takes credit for something, then you're beginning, the power becomes obscured again. For example, when I had in my 20s, when I thought I was very concerned about how is my life going to be? What am I going to achieve? Am I going to achieve nothing? I wanted to be, the ego was very strong, was fearful all the time, anxious all the time. If somebody had told me, you're going to be a great spiritual teacher, the ego would have said, oh, that's great, this is wonderful. well, let's say a psychic had told me that, and the psychic, if it had been a good psychic, he or she would also have added, but you have to die to yourself first. So when you become a real teacher, it won't feel as if you had achieved something. Then my ego probably would have said, oh, let me think about it. I don't know if I want that. And as to this day, I don't have the feeling that I have achieved these books. It's just, it's nothing. It's not, I didn't do it. It's, yes, there is a sense of satisfaction when people come and say, often happens, people say, your books changed my life or something like that. And it's lovely, it's satisfying. But I know there's no, who am I? I mean, there's just a consciousness. There's no separate entity that has achieved something. This separate entity got out of the way, and then the consciousness could use that mind. That's all. I haven't achieved anything. So spiritual awakening is not an achievement. It's a realization. That's very important. So your practice then is the doing and the being. Be engaged in doing and manifesting. And then losing yourself, it'll happen several times. You will lose yourself in the doing, and then you realize you lost yourself. For example, when some negative state arises, stress arises, very clear indicator that you've lost yourself in the doing, stress arising, impatience, anger, complaining. You lost yourself in the doing. And then return, and then it deepens. And then you truly, through the challenges, partly challenges that you create for yourself in a good way, because you want to create this or that, and the challenges that seemingly come out of nowhere, personal or collective, you work with that. Those are necessary for the evolutionary process. Even the viruses are necessary, it's strange to say that, the viruses are necessary for the evolution of human consciousness. Very strange, but true. We are one, the one being, the one consciousness. Then names and forms become almost irrelevant. Also other things become almost irrelevant, such as gender, age, personal history, color of your skin. Those things recede to the periphery, the background. You realize that which is beyond those external appearances. Practice a moment of thoughtless awareness, looking at each person, and then the totality, and realize there's only the one consciousness in disguise, disguising itself as a man or a woman, or black or white, or whatever color, or whatever age, or personal life situation, whatever it may be, is the one consciousness. So a moment of stillness, when we become aware of ourselves, or let's put it in the first person, I become aware of myself as consciousness, not the person. The person is a temporary appearance. In essence, I am consciousness. And that in itself, for a limited period of time, occasionally, you could use that as a pointer, I am consciousness, to occasionally say to yourself. But after that, there's a stillness. The truth is not in the words. The truth is, the words are the pointer. I am consciousness. And that consciousness is the consciousness of the universe, of course. It's not a separate consciousness. That's amazing. It frees you from this limited, absurdly limited sense of identity of who you are. And yet you honor that also. It has its place. Short-lived as it is, it has its place. Whatever it is, you honor it. Race, gender, whatever you, it's fine, it has its place. Essentially, it's not who you are. Thank you to all of you. We will meet again.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Eckhart Tolle, Essential Teachings, the podcast. You can follow these essential teachings on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, go to Spotify and follow this podcast. Join us next week for more enlightened teachings from Eckhart Tolle. Thank you for listening.